I'm a grateful believer in Jesus Christ. I'm in recovery from methamphetamine and alcohol. I've struggled with selfishness and resentments, and my name is Tony. A lot of addicts and alcoholics can point to abuse or dysfunction growing up as the cause of their problems. I can't. I believe I just had an addictive personality. I grew up with what I considered a pretty normal childhood. I was a mama's boy. I was shown nothing but love from my parents. I went to Disneyland. My dad was my baseball coach. He taught me how to fish and hunt. From the outside, we looked like we were the perfect family, except for there was no spirituality. The Word of God was never brought up in our house. My dad is an atheist, and my mom had escaped being a Southern Baptist and had no plans on returning. We never went to church. I always remember feeling that I didn't belong. I was really shy around girls, and I always felt like I was alone in a room full of people. I grew up in Southeast Portland, and at 12 years old, drugs started to show up around school and my friend group. I started smoking pot. I believed I had found what I'd been missing. When I was stoned, I didn't feel alone anymore. Smoking pot became a daily thing, and I went from a straight-A student to D's and F's very quickly. At 15, I started drinking alcohol. I felt like I had found my answer to awkwardness again. I finally felt comfortable. I could talk to people and not feel alone. Alcohol was my social lubricant. Alcohol and drugs very quickly became the answer to my problems, while at the same time the cause of them. By the time I was 16, I was failing. Let me move this up. By the time I was 16, I was failing high school, and my dad threatened to kick me out if he caught me smoking pot in his house again. So I chose to quit school and leave home. My mom was heartbroken. Very soon after that, it was the first time I did meth. The first time I did meth, I felt like I had found my reason to live. I belonged. I'd found a way to fill the hole inside my soul. I devoted my life to meth from then on. I moved in with a woman that was a couple years older than me and started selling meth. Meth had become my God, and I devoted my life to it. My relationships with my dad and others became estranged. The only friends I had were those who used meth. Meth took my moral compass away, and the difference between right and wrong was gone. By the time I was 22, I was facing my first prison sentence. I had mistakenly sold 8 ounces of meth to an ATF undercover agent and was facing 5 years in federal prison. Instead of paying for my crimes, I learned how to be a better criminal in prison. It was like school to perfect my crimes. Prison was where I learned how to manufacture methamphetamine and how to be a better criminal. I came out of prison much worse than before I went in. The first time I cooked meth, it consumed me. I found a new God and devoted my life to it. My mom, who had always stood beside me, started getting high with me. I don't know if it was curiosity or the fact that she missed me so much, but doing drugs with me was the only way she could spend time with me. She became my partner in crime, and we were inseparable. There may have been some codependency going on there with my mom. There had never been a day in my life when I hadn't spoken to my mom. I was her baby. I also joined the electrical apprenticeship with my dad's help, and I would work as an electrician in the day and cook meth at night. In 1997, my first son, Dylan, was born, and I became a non-existent deadbeat dad. I didn't have the time to be a dad. I was too busy manufacturing meth and committing crimes. I continued on my destructive path of crime and manufacturing until I was raided in a motel in 2003. My mom bailed me out of jail, and we thought it was best if I ran instead of facing the possibility of a lot of prison time again. I decided to run to Bend with a friend of mine who also cooked meth. The second day in Bend, we produced a big batch and went out to bars to celebrate and got really drunk. We ended up busting in a storefront art gallery window and stealing a bronze sculpture. I can't even remember what it looked like. We were instantly surrounded by police with no time to escape. I had only been in Bend for 2 days, and I was sitting in county jail with no bail and no way out. I couldn't believe how fast my life was spiraling. Once again, I called my mom, and once again, she co-signed my behavior. She told me we would figure this out, and that she would drive down to Bend the next day with bail money for my friend and pick up the drugs we had made the night before. I called her the next day after she got home, and we spoke briefly. She had stated she was going to try some of what I had made and sell the rest. When my mom hung up the phone, she said, "I love you, son." She had said every time we hung up, but this time it was different. She said it with meaning. That was the last time I ever spoke to my mom. She died shortly after that from a meth-induced brain aneurysm. My mom was my best friend, and now I killed her. I found a new best friend that day. Remorse, guilt, and shame. My behavior up to that point never seemed all that bad before because my mom had always made it feel okay. Now she was gone. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over drugs and alcohol, and our lives had become unmanageable. My life had instantly become unmanageable. I cried for hours in Deschutes County Jail. Other inmates tried to console me, but I was utterly broken. One inmate suggested I go to the church service with him that night. It was the first time I'd ever been to any kind of church. I don't remember much about the service, but I do remember a couple of the pastors from the outside sat and prayed with me, and it seemed to help. I was released from Deschutes County Jail 3 months later on a technicality. The meth raid in the hotel was an illegal search and seizure, so I was on the streets again. I thought I would try church for the first time. And the first one definitely was the wrong one for me. When I walked up in my grungy clothes smoking a cigarette, I caught the stares and felt the judgment immediately. Not one person introduced themselves, and it felt very apparent that I didn't belong, which just felt wrong. If I couldn't get help at church, what was the point? I decided to go back to getting high. It was the only thing that could take away all the guilt and shame I felt from my past behaviors. My behavior continued until Friday the 13th, February 2009. I was arrested and facing 10 charges of identity theft, 240 months in prison. That's 20 years. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I began to pray. I made my first and last plea bargain prayer with God. I promised if I didn't get a 20-year sentence, I would do everything I needed to change my life, including the 12 steps. I had been to inpatient treatment many times and hundreds of AA meetings and NA meetings, and I wasn't willing to do the steps, especially step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. No one was ever going to know my secrets. They were too bad. James 5:16, therefore confess your sins to one another so that you may be healed. I ended up taking a plea bargain for 54 months and was ready to change. I hit the ground running as far as my recovery when I got to prison. I got a step working guide and started facing all the things I had been afraid of in my past. Within 6 months, I had completed my fourth step. It was 36 pages long. And it covered every dark nook and cranny of my past, including my mom. No one was ever going to know that secret. I had worked it out with the prison chaplain, and he was willing to help me do my fifth step. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. I sat with the prison chaplain for 4 hours in his office and unloaded all my shame and guilt and remorse. He never once shamed me or interrupted me. Wasn't once shocked at the things I told him. When I was done, he just asked a simple question. If my son had done all those things I just told him, would I forgive him? Of course I would. Unconditional love. Then he told me that I was God's child and he forgave me too. Step six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. We prayed a simple prayer together, asking God to remove all my shame and guilt, and he did. I finally felt free, even though I still had 3 years left on my sentence. I had never felt that free in my life. I was forgiven. About that same time, a guy named Kent Whitaker, that some of you may know, showed up to a car show at South Fork Prison in 2011. I started talking to Kent, and he told me about the Celebrate Recovery thing. And then it was about Jesus and the 12 steps. AA and all those other ones that said you can use a doorknob as God weren't working for me. I needed Jesus. So, step seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. I walked out of that chaplain's office a changed man. I no longer walked around the prison yard bragging about my crimes or the next one. I started talking about how God had changed my life. I started listening to Christian music, and I found a Celebrate Recovery Bible in the prison. library, and I started reading it. I read the entire Bible in 2 months and found that every one of those 12 steps came from the Bible. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, became willing to make amends to them all. I started a list of everyone that I ever hurt in my life. 83 names were on my first list. My dad was my first, and my son was the second. Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I scheduled my dad to come visit me in prison. I had hurt him a lot. He didn't know that I had manufactured what had killed his wife. My dad is the perfect example of how the father was in the prodigal son story. I wasn't sure if he'd hit me or walk out of the visiting room during my amends. He didn't either. He forgave me and stated how hopeful he was of the man I was becoming. I scheduled my next visit with my son, who was 13 at the time. I apologized for being unavailable in his life and promised to change. My son and I slowly rebuilt our relationship for the next 2 years in the prison and visiting room. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. I learned how to pray. I didn't know how to pray. And began having daily conversations with Jesus. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carried this message to others and practiced these principles in all our affairs. My recovery was growing in prison. I met Jason, who was a plumber, and I'm an electrician, so it kind of worked out, who had already walked through the steps, and both of us started having meetings in prison and walked other men through the door to God by sponsorship. Jason eventually became my sponsor and is still my best friend to this day. I walked out of prison a new man. The old me was buried in that chaplain's office. I started aggressively making my amends. I really wanted to start making amends with all my girlfriends, ex-girlfriends, because I was single at the time. But my sponsor told me the best way I can make amends to them was probably just never talk to them again. And that's what I did. I went to my mom's grave and I made my amends to her. I believe she heard them. A month out of prison, I met Scott Bradley, and he invited me to his church. I was hesitant at first because of my past experience, but he encouraged me to come. As soon as I walked in the door of As Is Church, I'd found my home. Everyone was so loving and hopeful. I could feel Jesus in that church. I told Scott about this Celebrate Recovery thing that I'd heard about in prison, and God opened every door very quickly. That's when I met Gloria and Roger. I don't know if anybody knows Gloria and Roger, but Gloria has adopted me. I'm one of her children. And within a month, we had a thriving CR meeting. About a year after becoming the ministry leader, I met my wife, Amanda, and we started dating. I also met Pete, and he became my roommate and best friend. Pete also became very instrumental in CR, in the CR ministry. My life was complete, or so I thought. But the one thing I hadn't worked on, pride, crept in. I began thinking of the ministry I created, not God, and I felt I was above the rules. Amanda became pregnant before we were married. Proverbs 16, pride goes before destruction. Shortly after I announced that we were pregnant, I was asked by Scott Bradley, the pastor of As Is Church, whom I thought would be a good replacement for my ministry leader position. How dare him? Didn't he know who I was? Apparently, he knew exactly who I was. A leader who thought they were above the rules. I recommended Pete take over my ministry leader and left, take over as ministry leader, and I left As Is Church with a resentment that I caused. My son Wyatt was born on May 2nd, 2015. 10 days after his birth, he was diagnosed with a deadly virus and admitted to Randall's Children's Hospital. I hadn't learned how to lean on God in a tragedy. And so I sought out alcohol for my comfort. My son almost died. A tragedy took me out. Wyatt made it through the tragedy, but my sobriety didn't. Amanda and I quickly went into full-blown alcoholism and would drink excessively every day for the next 5 years. They were very dark times for both of us. Head full of recovery and a stomach full of booze made me a miserable person. Amanda and I were married by Scott Bradley on August 5th of 2015, shortly after Wyatt was released from the hospital. Amanda and I moved to Malala and isolated with our alcohol. The next 5 years would include my criminality spiraling out of control, a suicide attempt on my wife, and a domestic violence case in which she was removed from the house for a year. Early in 2021, Amanda became pregnant again, and we attempted recovery. I must confess that having another child at 52 didn't excite me, and it took me a while to come around. We were going to have a baby girl, our first girl, and that was exciting. We decided to name her Truly Joyce Reese, after my mom. True Joy. At 6 months pregnant, Amanda asked me to come home from work early because she was spotting. We rushed to the hospital, and they were unable to find a heartbeat. They scheduled us for a DNC the next morning. God was about to teach me how to handle grief. I wrote this in my journal, and I'd like to share it with you. It's titled Beautiful Pain. Pain and suffering are God's megaphone, C.S. Lewis. When we found out we lost her, my first thought was, I need a drink. I need 1,000 drinks to mask the pain. Did I bring my water up here? I knew I wasn't strong enough to handle the emotions. So I called my sponsor and I begged him to tell me what to do. He wouldn't. He never has given me advice. He did, however, ask me what advice would I give someone if they called and asked the same thing. He did tell me if he gives me advice, I might miss the beauty I might find in the suffering. The next morning when we woke, the alcoholic on my shoulder was screaming, "We need a drink. We can't get through this sober. Don't call anyone. All you need to do is drink and take a whole drunken pass on this whole day." Fear had taken over. I logged into a 7 a.m. AA Zoom meeting and cried and did the hardest thing for me to do. I asked for help and gave out my number. On the 20-minute ride to the hospital, I suddenly was not alone. I had 17 texts from other men blowing up my phone, telling me they were with me. I wasn't alone. The answer I had been looking for came to me. Hold my wife's hand. I quenched my wife's hand and looked her in the eye and said, God's got us. We can do this. We didn't walk in that hospital alone. There was God, there was God, my wife, me, and 17 drunks blowing up my phone. We were going to be okay, and I wasn't going to drink no matter what. That's when the beauty in our pain happened. My beautiful wife and I, in pure raw pain. Thank God for the blessings in our life, and laid our baby girl on his lap. I had the most intimate moment I've ever shared with another human being. Had I been drunk, I would have missed it. Had my sponsor told me what to do, I would have missed it. There's beauty in the suffering. You just got to look for it. God had taught me how to get through tragedy sober. Halloween 2021, I was taking my children trick-or-treating and got pulled over. They had been looking for me for months. I was charged with 4 burglaries that I had committed a year before. I was booked into Washington County Jail and facing 60 months, my 4th prison sentence. I did the only thing I knew how to do. I prayed. My wife and I prayed, and we trusted in God's plan. I was offered drug court in Washington County and ordered to pay $35,000 in restitution. I'm down to $2,000. I would spend the next 2 years away from my wife and kids. God covered our every need we had. Amanda and I went through marriage counseling, and we both walked through the steps and made our amends to each other. God's plan was perfect. Today, I have a life I could have never dreamed of. I'm a present father, a devoted husband, and I'm involved in my local church's CR ministry. With Scott back there. I lead the men's small group, and I'm leading a step study, and I've once again found my purpose. Well, I closely watch out for my pride and resentments because I know they will kill me. Thank you for letting me share.